Blog Talk Radio.
Show. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, on this 11th of October 2011, as we discuss week five in the league where no contract is guaranteed. As always, your call number is 347-215-6180. You can follow me at twitter.com/WilliamGerald or hit me up on Facebook.com/CyrilQuinn. I'm also available for my Blog Talk Radio audience on the chat line. We begin with the game of the week, New Orleans edges Carolina 30-27. New Orleans improves to 4-1 on the season. The Panthers drop to 1-4, though those four losses have been, for the most part, very close. They have been in every game. I mean, easily could have won the Arizona and Chicago game, played Green Bay tough. So Carolina has not played, certainly has not played as bad as their record would indicate, but New Orleans was able to get the three-point victory. Drew Brees, a huge day for him as he goes for 332 of 45, 359 yards, two touchdowns and an interception, including the game-winning touchdown to Pierre Thomas that Coleman made followed a 13-play, finished up a 13-play, 86-yard drive, took about 6 minutes in terms of time. If you watch that drive, you know, it's why Drew Brees is such a great player. I mean, he methodically took the Saints down the field, ate up clock, and you knew the Saints were going to score. I mean, neither one of these defenses really had much success all day in terms of stopping the other team. But it was just beautiful to watch Brees at work in that last couple of minutes with that particular drive. Cam Newton did not have a bad day at all himself, going 16-31, 224, two touchdowns, and had one pick. He also ran a touchdown in, had seven carries for 27 yards. D'Angelo Williams, big day for him, with nine receptions, nine carries, 115 yards, and a touchdown. Again, Saints improved to 4-1. Carolina falls to 1-4. Saints are a quiet. If there's such thing as being a quiet 4-1, New Orleans Saints certainly are the definition of that. You know, Green Bay is getting a lot of attention. The demise of the Philadelphia Eagles certainly taken some headlines. Now you have Tim Tebow, the Jets, Patriots, Detroit, and here the Saints are at 4-1 with their only loss coming opening night against the Green Bay Packers. So again, until I see otherwise, I'll still say that they, behind the Green Bay Packers, are the second best team in all of football. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return on this latest edition of the NFL Show, an emotional day down in Houston, and a giant collapse. We'll talk about that. Well, I shouldn't say collapse, but a giant defeat. We'll talk about that and much, much more in this latest edition of the NFL Show. (347) 215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the NFL Show. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you for the next hour as we discuss the weeks, as we just look back on week five in the league where no contract is guaranteed. Oakland takes out Houston 25-20, a very good road win for the Raiders. As they improved to 3-2 on the season, Houston falls to 3-2. Certainly, an emotional win, as everybody knows, the passing of Al Davis comes on Saturday afternoon. We talked about it. We touched on it a bit during the opening of the Saturday morning wake up call, and get away his credit. I mean, that is not an easy you find something like this, and listen. You can say what you want about Al Davis. His players, his coaches loved him. Well, man, I don't know how much Mike Shanahan loved it, but everybody except Mike Shanahan loves Al Davis. To find that out and then have to play a football game basically 24 hours later on the road, Raiders did a good job here. Did a good job. And Hugh Jackson, the whole Sebastian Janikowski, who was absolutely the star of the game, because Janikowski kicked 4 field goals. 3 of them from over 50 yards, which tied an NFL record, and he absolutely is a weapon. I mean, when you cross midfield, you are somewhat within his range. And we saw him earlier in Denver, kick a 61-yard field goal like it was nothing. And this guy, listen, I wouldn't draft him in the first round, but I can understand you taking him. Him being a priority as far as, in terms of a draft, a third or fourth round draft pick. The guy, he is a big time weapon to have when you can have a kicker who is going to make the big kicks and has just basically almost unlimited range. I mean, there are not too many kickers around that with that kind of range, and certainly pound for pound, probably. Right now, Adam Vinatieri is not getting any younger. And listen, Adam Vinatieri was the greatest clutch kicker of all time. Let's not mistake that. But pound for pound, Janikowski is probably the best kicker in all of football right now. So, again, great win for the Raiders. Improved to 3-2 on the season. This is despite the fact that they, really did not run the ball very well, or didn't even try to run the ball. Let's be honest about that. Darren McFadden only had 16 carries, in a game where, you know, Jason Campbell just completes 15 to 35. So the Raiders did, you know, kind of kept Houston in the game, and it kind of kept Houston in the game by not giving the ball to McFadden, but were able to overcome that. Matt Schaub had a chance to win the game late, but threw an interception to Michael Huff when they were down at the Raider 5 at the Raider 5 yard line. Seattle shocks the G-men 36-25. Giants seem to have one or two of these every year where, you know, a team that has no business beating them comes into their home building, and beat and takes them out. I don't get it. I mean, even the year they won a Super Bowl, they had, you know, that Minnesota did it twice in like a 3 or 4 year period where they came into Giants, where they came into Meadowlands and embarrassed the Giants at home. This one's a terrible loss because the Giants' schedule in a couple of weeks is about to get very serious, to the point to where they're going to have one of the toughest schedules in all of football. So they needed to rack up all these wins. They needed to really be 4-0. They absolutely needed to be 4-1. Bad loss for the Giants. They fall to 3-2. They allowed Tavares Jackson and Charlie Whitehurst to throw the ball all over the place. Jackson and Whitehurst combined for 26-41, 279, two touchdowns and an interception. Of course, Whitehurst filled in for Jackson when he left the game with an injury. Eli Manning, the story continues to be, you know, Jekyll and Hyde, 24-39, 420 yards, three touchdowns, but three interceptions, including one pick six that basically put the game away. Marshawn Lynch had a big game for 12 carries, 98 yards. Seattle is 2-3, and again, Seattle, they're an awful 2-3. Seattle's not any good. I mean, they're really not a good football team. They, you know, found some way to scrape, you know, two wins together, but they're a bad football team. They scored 20 points on the Giants in the fourth quarter. And again, to me, the story about the Giants that continues to dominate their season is their secondary, or lack thereof. I mean, their secondary play this year has been awful. Anybody, and I mean anybody, can throw on the Giants. You know, I watched Sam Bradford with no receivers throw on the Giants. I watched Rex Grossman throw on the Giants. Now you watch Tavares Jackson and Charlie Whitehurst throw on the Giants. So, what are they going to do when they play New England? I mean, geez. So, not looking good if you're a Giants fan, even though you are at 3-2 and in second place in the NFC East. When we return, Minnesota, a first for the Vikings, and Pittsburgh gets back on the winning track. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the NFL Show. 347-215-6180. Surreal Quinn, 13 minutes after the 7 o'clock hour. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. 15 minutes after the 7 o'clock hour in this latest edition of the NFL Show. Welcome back. Looking back on week 5 of the NFL season as we enter the second quarter of the NFL season. Minnesota gets his first win of the season with a 34-10 victory over Arizona. Minnesota improves to 1-4 in the season. Arizona falls to 1-4. Both these teams certainly will be in the Andrew Luck sweepstakes, but Minnesota, this was a day for the Vikings, a day for Adrian Peterson, who finally was treated like a franchise $100 million running back as he got 29 carries, 122 yards, 3 touchdowns. Had 3 touchdowns in the first quarter, so if there's somebody who had him on your fantasy team, you certainly were happy, but also a little annoyed that he didn't have 5 or 6 touchdowns. But he had 3 touchdowns. The game was over in the first quarter. Kevin Cobb continues to struggle for the Cardinals, 21-42, 232 yards, 0 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. So, that's why Michael Vick isn't taking that much heat in Philadelphia because, where are you going to say if you're a Philadelphia fan? Well, you could have had Cobb. No, you're certainly not going to say that. You're certainly not going to say we could have had Donovan McNabb. So both, it's ironic, both those guys are struggling mightily, and really all three of them to an extent, really, Vick, Cobb, and McNabb. McNabb, I think the object for Minnesota is to have McNabb throw less passes as possible. they want the ball in Adrian Peterson's hands. He throw in a league in a year where you have guys throwing the ball 40, 50 times, 35 to 40 times on average. Don McNabb throws the ball 21 times, but it was a formula that worked for the Vikings. Again, they improved to 1-4 in the season. Arizona also is at 1-4 as well. Pittsburgh with an impressive 38-17 victory over Tennessee. Pittsburgh improves to 3-2. Tennessee falls to 3-2. I thought Pittsburgh would have a tougher time than this, considering how they were playing coming into this game, and also the fact that they were so banged up on the offensive line and Roethlisberger. But Pittsburgh was able to. Roethlisberger had a huge day with the 5 touchdown passes, 24-34, 228, 5 TDs, 1 interception. They got the running game going with Jonathan Dwyer. He had 11 carries, 107 yards. Pittsburgh as a team had a 174 yards rushing. Nice win for Pittsburgh. I mean, I thought that that Houston game kind of knocked them back a bit, and I thought that they could possibly be headed towards a slide after that Houston game. But they bounced back nicely. Mike Wallace is a guy who's turned into one of the most consistent receivers in football. He's a legit number one. He's going to get you 90 to 100 yards seemingly every game. He's really played well this season. He had a touchdown. And it seemed like everybody caught a touchdown. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger, those 5 touchdowns, I would have laid down any amount of money that Ben Roethlisberger wouldn't have 5 touchdowns in a game this year with that offensive line. But he was able to he did a great job. Again, good win for the Steelers as they go to 3-2 on a season. When we return, we'll look at the most impressive win of the game of the week, and also we will talk about what could have been in Indianapolis. That's coming up and much, much more on this latest edition of the NFL Show. We'll be right back. 21 minutes after the 7 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the NFL Show. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn. San Francisco crushes Tampa Bay 48-3. They improved to 4-1 on the season. Tampa Bay falls to 3-2. To me, the most impressive win of the day. I mean, I think Tampa Bay is a pretty good team. We'll be in the playoff hunt, but this was San Francisco's day from start to finish. They did whatever they wanted to. Alex Smith had a nice day going, you know, with three touchdown passes, no picks. Frank Gore ran the ball all over the place, 20 carries, 125 yards. For the game, San Francisco had 213 yards rushing on 36 carries, and San Francisco did whatever they wanted. Call me calls. Rodgers had a pick six. And San Francisco did whatever they wanted to do. Tampa Bay was never in this game. I didn't think about the whole short week West Coast factor, but that certainly may have factored into that. Tampa Bay looked flat, but this was all about the 49ers. They played great. That division is theirs to lose by far, without question. I mean, everybody in that division stinks, other than with the Rams, Arizona, and Seattle. I mean, San Francisco can't win that division this year. They'll never win it. But I think they will win it, barring 5 or 6 catastrophic injuries. They're a good team. I mean, San Francisco has a legit defense with Patrick Willis. You know, Carlos Rogers, who had a pick six, has helped the secondary out. That they are very difficult to run against. They're opportunistic. Offensively, you know, Gore's had a couple of games in a row here. And Alex Smith, you know, listen, now he's gotten more chances than Steve Howe. But, you know, he's making the most of it this year. He's played well. I mean, he's played well. He has not, you know, he hasn't made, you know, catastrophic mistakes for them to lose a game, to lose games. And Jim Harbaugh has done a tremendous job so far. And that team, again, they are a tough team to deal with. Easily could be 5-0. Remember that Dallas game? They were up 10 in the fourth quarter, end up losing in overtime. So they're playing well right now, and absolutely they are in total control of that division. Cincinnati over Jacksonville, 30-20. Cincinnati improves to 3-2 on the season. Jacksonville falls to 1-4. Andy Dalton had a nice day, 21-33, 179 yards, touchdown, and interception. Geno Atkins scored a defensive touchdown for Cincinnati. Cincinnati's defense has played extremely well over the course of this season. They have one of the top-ranked defenses in the whole league. I'm shocked that Cincinnati is 3-2. I thought they were going to be one of the worst teams in the league. You know, the whole Carson Palmer thing, starting a rookie quarterback. Cedric Benson really hasn't played well this season. There's a lot of things that were going on that I thought would curtail them to having a poor season, but they've, you know, come out and really have played extremely well to start off. Jacksonville is Jacksonville. I mean, they're going to be in the mix for Andrew Luck. They are just an awful, awful looking team. Minus Maurice Jones-Drew. That team is just. It's just hideous. I mean, that's all there is to it. If you're trying to make the playoffs, you cannot lose to Jacksonville and take yourself serious as a playoff contender. I mean, you just can't. I mean, they're that bad. A lot of bad teams in the league this year. I mean, there are a lot of just bad teams. I mean, teams that are just like, you know, 1-15, 2-14 bad. When we return on this latest edition of the NFL Show, Indy comes close with no cigar, and San Diego, well, you know, remains San Diego. We'll talk about that and much, much more in this latest edition of the NFL Show.
When you walk through the
27 minutes after the 7 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the NFL show, Surreal Quinn, taking you for the next half hour as we discuss week 5 of the NFL season. Indianapolis falls to Kansas City 28-24. Indianapolis drops to 0-5 on the season. Kansas City improves to 2-3, and it looked for the better part of this game that Indianapolis was headed towards their first victory of the season, up 17-0, up 24-7. But Kansas City goes on a 21-0 run to end the game, led by Matt Castle and Jackie Battle. Castle ended up with 4 touchdown passes on 21-29 passing for 254. Jackie Battle, who I had never even heard of before this day, before Sunday, 19 carries for 119 yards. Kansas City ran all over Indianapolis, which is no surprise. Everybody runs on Indianapolis. 38 carries, 194 yards as a team. Curtis Painter played well. I mean, 15-27, 277, 2 touchdowns. Pierre Garçon has played well over the last couple of games. He had 5 catches, 125 yards, 2 touchdowns, but to no avail. Listen, I'll say this about Indianapolis. They play hard. They are not, you know, trying to get Andrew Luck. Not any of those players, because they, you know, Pittsburgh, they could have easily won that game. They have been in just about, with the exception of the Houston game to start the season, they have been in just about every game. They play extremely hard, game in, game out, but they just don't have the horses. I mean, let's put Peyton Manning aside for a second. You know, they got guys out. They have other players who are injured, and that roster just is not that good to begin with. So, you know, they're trying hard. There's like the little engine that could is, again, it's to absolute Norvell, and again, who knows. They're going to win. I mean, they will win at least – I would say they're going to win at least two games on effort. You know, you play hard in the NFL. You play hard week in, week out, week in, week out. You're going to win 2 or 3 games. So their time is coming soon as far as winning the game. They won't go on 16. I'll say that. San Diego over Denver 29-24. San Diego improves to 4-1. Denver drops to 1-4. And this – you know, you don't even have to watch San Diego football – week in and week out, because it is absolutely the same story over and over. It's like a bad soap opera. I mean, it's Groundhog Day. San Diego almost blows a 26-10 lead entering the fourth quarter. They outgained Denver, you know, 400-plus yards to something like 270. To 418 to 275. They had the ball over 40 minutes, and almost find a way to lose the game. And that is absolutely typical of San Diego. It's remarkable how they play the same game every week. Denver, of course, the big story in this game is, of course, Tim Tebow entered this game for Kyle Orton. Now, Tebow did account for 2 touchdowns, had a touchdown pass and a touchdown run, but let's not get crazy here. I mean, he was 6 carries for 38 yards and a touchdown with the touchdown run, and was 4-10 for 79 yards and a touchdown pass, no picks. The fans got what they wanted. It's Tebow time. We're going to see what happens from here on out. He was officially named starter today because Denver has a bye week. But to me, I just think about how poorly that the organization has handled this situation. And, you know, you easily could have traded Kyle Orton in the offseason and just say, you know what, Tebow's our guy, we're going to see what he's made of, and go from here. To go through this dog and pony show, well, Orton's definitely a guy, Tebow's third or fourth string. Fans, you know, the fans bitch and moan for a month, now Tebow's the guy. And again, I have no problem with them putting Tebow in. Listen, Kyle Orton, you know, did not play well, 6-13, 34 yards, wasn't, you know, the offense was there as a doorknob. Tebow provided the offense with a spark. But, you know, the whole idea, I'm just trying to figure out the fascination with Tim Tebow. And that is the question of the night for this NFL show. What is the fascination with Tim Tebow? I would love to hear from a Denver Bronco fan. I would love to hear, why do you cheer for this guy? Why? Please. He's not exciting to watch. That's the thing about it. He's not exciting. I don't get it. I don't get it at all. It's like, you know, the guy, he can't play. I mean, that's all there is to it. He cannot. If the Denver Broncos wouldn't have drafted him with that first round pick in 2010, he would have fell to the third, fourth, and maybe fifth round. Maybe he gets to the fourth round. Denver was the only team that was crazy enough to take him that early. I mean, you heard Merrill Hodge. Merrill Hodge had him as a fourth or fifth round grade. This is a guy who studies film for a living, basically, in terms of watching quarterbacks. I just don't understand why people love him, why are people so intrigued by him. I don't get it whatsoever. But as of right now, it's the Tim Tebow era has begun in Denver. So, you know, good luck with that if you're a Denver Bronco fan. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Cyril Quinn on this latest edition of the NFL Show. When we return, we'll talk about the Jets and also Monday Night Football as Detroit stays perfect. That's coming up and much, much more on this latest edition of the NFL Show. Back to this latest edition of the NFL Show. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn. New England improves to 4-1 on the season with a 30-21 victory over the New York Jets. Jets fall to 2-3. Tough stretch here for the Jets, as you know, Oakland. You know, they've lost three straight, losing, you know, Oakland. Of course, Baltimore. We haven't let Baltimore, and now New England. All those, you know, good news for the Jets is that all those games are road games. The bad news is, if you want to be considered a contending Super Bowl caliber team, you got to be able to beat other good teams. So, I mean, this, you know, that's all there is to it. Jets continue to struggle as far as defensively. And that's, to me, that's a story. I mean, you know, Brady could throw for 300 on anybody. But the idea that you allow the Patriots to run for a 152, Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, 27 for 136 and a couple of touchdowns, just to me shows you why I would have no fear of the Jets. The Jets are no longer – the Jets have been punched in the face. You know, they go from the bully to being bullied. You know, teams have no fear of the Jets' defense anymore. The talk is just empty rhetoric at this point. And right now, I think the Jets, you know, I think the Jets' prospects to make the playoffs are, are 50-50. I can see the Jets easily missing the playoffs. They don't impress me. I'm not impressed with the Jets at all. I mean, think about the Jets this year. What victory have they had that really stands out? I mean, they beat Jacksonville at home, big deal. They beat Dallas opening weekend at home in a game they absolutely should have lost. I mean, what signature win have they had? They haven't had any. They don't have a signature win. New England did not. They had a couple calls go against them in the New England game. Patriots didn't run it high. You never got the sense that the Jets were ever going to win that game. Yeah, you just didn't. Almost felt like New England in some ways was even toying with them a little bit. But you never got the sense that the Jets were ever in that game. They continued, again, to struggle offensively. If they cannot run, they're finished. Now, Sean Green had a decent day, 21 carries, 83 yards, and a touchdown. But they, I don't know what happened to ground and pound. That totally has went out the window. It has become, basically the Mark Sanchez. So, and with that being said, that will make for a long season for the New York Jets. Detroit over the Chicago, 24-13. Detroit State, along with Green Bay, remains the two only unbeaten teams in the NFL at 5-0. Chicago falls to 2-3. Javid Best was the difference in this game. 12 carries, 163 yards. A touchdown, including an 88-yard touchdown that really broke the game open. Chicago was down 14-10 at the time, and after that touchdown run, they were not to be heard from again over the course of the night. Calvin Johnson continues his stellar season. 7 catches, 130 yards, and a touchdown, including a 73-yard touchdown. Matt Forte had a pretty good night, 22 carries, 116 yards, but no touchdowns. Chicago – the game plan was solid. I mean, they ran Forte a lot early. They kept the game to their pace. Problem is, you allow Javid Best to run for 163 yards, and that just should not happen. We knew Chicago's pass defense was suspect, but, you have Brian Urlacher and Lance Briggs, and When you have a front seven that makes it with Urlacher, Briggs, and Julius Peppers, Javon Best should not run on you for 162 yards. That's all there is to it. I mean, that should never happen if you have that kind of front seven. And I know that the Bears secondary is terrible, but that front seven is still pretty. They still have some names on that front seven. But give Detroit credit, despite the fact that Calvin Johnson did have another big day. They were able to establish the running game, and it's going to be very paramount that over the course of the season that they establish some semblance of a running game and not just hand the ball off when Matthew Stafford's, arm gets tired. Because, the Matthew Stafford to Calvin Johnson connection is great, but a good team can kind of neutralize that, and they will have to be able to turn to something else. When we return, another disappointment for the city of brotherly love, and the champs keep on rolling. We'll talk about that and much, much more in this latest edition of the NFL Show. Thank you. Welcome back to this latest edition of the NFL Show. We had a little technical issue, but certainly we're able to get it resolved. 45 minutes after the 7 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the NFL Show. Buffalo over Philadelphia, 31-24. Buffalo survives a late Philly run. They were up 28-7 at one point in this game. Philadelphia drops to 1-4. Buffalo improves to 4-1. Two teams going in opposite directions without question. Big day for Fred Jackson, 26 carries, 111 yards, and a touchdown, and a couple of touchdowns. Also had six catches for 85 yards. Philadelphia just finds new and different ways to lose a football game. Five turnovers. Michael Vick, four interceptions. Two of them were not his fault. And he did account for well over 400 yards of total offense as he threw for over 300 yards and had 90 yards rushing. Again, Philadelphia just, you know, doesn't pretend like LeSean McCoy doesn't exist. LeSean McCoy had 11 carries for 80 yards and a touchdown. Yes, that 11 carries for 80 yards, almost 8 yards a carry, but for some reason he only gets 11 carries, which, you know, I don't get myself. I mean, you know, but that's, you know, that's why Philadelphia is Philadelphia right now. They don't, not only is their defense awful right now, they don't even utilize the most, you know, efficient and just the best, the number one offensive weapon that they have. And LeSean McCoy is their best offensive weapon. I'm sorry. I mean, Michael Vick was great last year, but right now, the person that would scare me the most on Philadelphia team would be LeSean McCoy. But of course, he might not scare you too much because they never use him the way that they should. Philadelphia, you know, I paid real close attention to what Philadelphia says after their losses in the press conferences, and you get a sense that, and you certainly can't like what you're hearing if you're a Philadelphia fan, because you get the sense that, you know, they're saying stuff like, you know, we'll get out, we'll snap out of it. You know, we're a talented team. It's like they're caught up in their own, in all this talent that they acquired during the offseason. And they're thinking that their talent is going to bail them out instead of them doing, cleaning up the necessary, you know, mistakes that they have to clean up in order to get better. And instead of doing the little things like not jumping off sides when it was obvious that the Bills are trying to draw you off sides, you know, being stripped of the football, silly penalties, and things of that nature. And that, I mean, that's what's been costing the Eagles all year long, is just not being able to do the little things that can win you or lose you a football game. And the Bills do those things. I mean, the Bills aren't talented as Philadelphia. They ain't nowhere near. But the Bills do the small things. And they do enough of those small things that, you know, they win close, and they win all these close games. And look at the close games that they won against Oakland, against the, against New England. I know they had the bad loss at Cincinnati. And by the way, that loss at Cincinnati does not look as bad, considering Cincinnati is 3-2. But it looks like it's just one of those seasons for the Eagles. Like, you know, I've seen many a times a season go down the drain, you know, very quickly, whether it be through injuries or just inconsistent play. And, you know, 1-4 is not a hole, that's a ditch. So they will find themselves in basically a must win game next week when they travel down to Washington D.C. or the land over Maryland to take on the Redskins. Good news for Philly, though, if there was any good news, is that the Giants lost. So at least they're not three games behind a division rival or a division opponent. Green Bay over Atlanta, 25-14. I thought Green Bay was ripe for the picking in this game. Atlanta jumped out ahead of them 14-0 in the first quarter. Green Bay looked out of sync. Atlanta was controlling the clock. They were running the football. They had a long drive to start off. Green Bay only had three possessions in the first half. But for some reason, Atlanta just stopped running the ball. Next thing you know, Aaron Rodgers gets hot, and Green Bay ends the second half with six possessions. So the game sped up. Aaron Rodgers had almost 400 yards of passing, and Green Bay outscored them 25-0 for the rest of the game. Green Bay's defense gave by far and away its best performance of the season. They really shut down Atlanta after that second Atlanta touchdown. And again, I don't understand what Atlanta was doing. I thought Atlanta came out with a perfect game plan. You couldn't draw up any better. They ran the ball. They controlled the clock. They hit Aaron Rodgers. They had Green Bay reeling. They had the offense out of sync. Next thing you know, again, they stopped running the football, and you know it all fell apart. If you're gonna ask Matt Ryan to go toe to toe with Aaron Rodgers, it's not gonna happen. I mean, Matt Ryan is a very good quarterback. Aaron Rodgers is, you know, and I'll say it again, the best player in the league. And it's just, I mean, it's like asking a team, a basketball team, to run with the Los Angeles Lakers of the 80s. You don't beat the Lakers in a track meet. The 80s Showtime in a track meet. You gotta slow the game down, cut the possessions. And again, Atlanta did that in the first half, but were not able to continue that on throughout the course of the game. But the key moment in this game, and you know, everybody will point to the James Jones 70-yard touchdown, but even before that, it was 14-6, and Mason Crosby kicks a 56-yard field goal to make it 14-9. And I thought that was a big moment because he misses that field goal. Atlanta has, you know, that kind of takes the air out of Green Bay a bit. Atlanta, you know, plays with a shorter field. Maybe they get a field goal to go up 17-6. Who knows? But that seemed to, like, galvanize the Packers when he made that field goal. And even the players were saying it in the post game. I agree. I thought that was a big moment in that particular game. Listen, Green Bay is that good. I mean, Green Bay is that good in where they can go on the road in a revenge game. Remember, they beat Atlanta 48-21 and play their C game and come out with an 11-point victory. They're that good right now. Now, I don't know how serious this Chad Clifton injury is, but like I told a buddy of mine, everybody on that team outside of Aaron Rodgers, and with the possible exception of Charles Woodson, is replaceable. I mean, we saw that last year with Jermichael Finley, Ryan Grant, you know, Nick Barnett, or, you know, a whole bunch of guys being out of the mix for the Packers. So Packers keep on rolling. They're 5-0. They're 5-0 on the season, and they certainly will be looking at 6-0 as they will take on the St. Louis Rams next week. Still to come on this latest edition of the NFL show. We'll look ahead to next week, and also we'll look ahead to next week, and I'll tell you what I thought about week number 5. Minutes after the 7 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the NFL show, Cyril Quinn. Next week, some big games next week. Detroit hosts San Francisco in a battle of San Francisco, who is at 4-1, Detroit at 5-1. San Francisco certainly their defense will be challenged in a major way with that facing Calvin Johnson and company. That'll be a nice matchup for Detroit, a team that is physical, that wants to run the ball and play good defense. So looking forward to that. Buffalo and the Giants, can Buffalo take out his second straight NFC East opponent? Giants have to have that game. I mean, if the Giants want to make the playoffs, that to me, that is an elimination game for the Giants as far as they make the playoffs. They lose that game, I guarantee you they will not make the playoffs if they lose that game. That's how big it is to me. Philadelphia and Washington, another elimination game. As far as Philadelphia is concerned, Philadelphia loses that game, then you know you can start thinking about maybe you can start thinking about them for Andrew Luck. They had again a must win for them, 1-5, and the season is finished. Dallas at New England should be a very high scoring affair. Dallas coming off the bye at 2-2, traveling to New England to face the 4-1 Patriots, whose defense is still awful. You know, they were fortunate playing the New York Jets, who can't do too much offensively. So Tony Romo should be able to put up some numbers. They'll get Miles Austin back, by the way, for that particular game. So that is your week in the NFL. That is what the NFL will look like next week, as we begin the second quarter of the NFL season. Of course, you had teams who had it was the first bye week this past week with no Dallas, no Miami, Baltimore. Those teams had off for the week. Listen, I think that, you know, to me, you know, the Packers and Saints still remain the two best teams in the league. I think that the AFC is absolutely wide open. Slight edge to Baltimore, slight edge, because, you know, they run the ball, they play the best defense right now in the AFC. They're not a favorite. But if you made me have to choose, I'll probably have to choose them as of right now. A lot of teams, again, that are just, you know, you thought had a chance to have a good year, but just unimpressive. I mean, the Eagles are obviously at the top of that list. A lot of people are high on Dallas. I'm not sure about them. Pittsburgh has not played well. San Diego has not played well. So there have been a few disappointments, to say the least, in the NFL. A lot of bad teams. I mentioned that. Everybody wants Andrew Luck, but it's getting ridiculous with how many awful teams you have. So, I mean, we'll see, you know, again, second quarter of the NFL season. And to me, the thing you got to remember about the NFL, there are at least five twists and turns to every season. So you don't get a great sense, unless you start out 0-7, 0-5, you don't get a great sense of what the season is going to look like until really Thanksgiving. Until really Thanksgiving. I mean, and let's be honest with you. I know the first eight games is a good indicator, but Thanksgiving, when you start getting around Thanksgiving, that's when you can start to kind of like, you know, see teams, you know, begin to separate themselves. Right now, you know, like I said, Green Bay is the best team in football. They are the most complete team in football. Their defense isn't great, but it doesn't have to be great. Like, they don't have to play the kind of defense they played last year. If they played that kind of defense, then it wouldn't be fair. To be honest with you, there's no dominant defenses in the league right now. I mean, I think Baltimore, pound for pound, probably has the best. Washington, San Francisco both play good defense. Cincinnati plays good defense, but, you know, what great offensive team have they played? I mean, they held down Buffalo, so I'll give them credit for that. But, you know, to me, your best bet, if you don't have a superstar quarterback, if you run the football, play good defense, those kind of teams, I think the San Franciscos and Washingtons of the world have a chance to do well because they do those two things in terms of run the football and playing good defense. And I mentioned it last week, because there are too many teams who just want to throw the ball all over the place. I mean, the Raiders, I mean, my goodness, you know, Jason Campbell goes 15-35, and you have Darren McFadden run the ball 16 times. I mean, that, you know, that's a recipe for disaster, but they were able to survive that. So certainly keep your eyes on the passing game and how that progresses as, you know, the weather starts to get colder and teams are basically almost forced to run. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the NFL Show. Always catch a replay at blogtalkradio.com/SurrealQuinn. I will post it on Facebook, and I will see you next week. Have a great week and enjoy week 6 in the league, where no contract is guaranteed. So long.